webcasting to the world.
Do you remember the moment that you saw yourself in God and God in you, and you were one with the universe and God and everybody?
Knowing the truth about the gospel.
You were one with the prostitutes and pimps and priests and kings, and there was nobody on earth that was better than you nor less than you.
That we are all righteous.
And no one on earth was any less in Christ than anyone else.
That's Mike Williams, and this is the Gospel Revolution.
Welcome to the Gospel Revolution Powercast for the 21st of July, 2016, only a couple of days out from our Calgary conference, broadcasting here today from the home of Redemptionism, where we love every train of thought visiting our station of freedom. We're coming to you from the Gospel Revolution studios, thanks to the generosity of Gospel Revolutionaries Jimmy and Carrie McCollum, where, with the Roman philosopher Seneca the Younger, we say religion is regarded by the common people as true, by the wise as false, and by the rulers as useful. But right now, from Houston, Texas, bringing more gospel CPR to you is that great unteacher, the heretic's hope, the preacher's paradox, and the founder and president of the Gospel Revolution, Michael L. Williams, where the L stands for luminary.
Good evening, Barris Bartlett.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. In fact, as I'm speaking right now, I'm in the air to Canada.
What are you teaching on? Tell us.
I am teaching on the last Trump. And it's not political either. So.
Oh, that's good. That's very good. I saw this week where Pat Robertson, now I don't know if this was a tongue-in-cheek website or actually it was real, but Pat Robertson sees Trump at the right hand of God.
Ah, okay.
I don't think there's...
Well, you know, Pat has seen several things.
Yes.
He saw himself as president once. So.
Mm-hmm. Yep. That's probably why he sees anyone in the presidency at the right hand of God. There's probably very few countries in the world that don't know exactly what we're talking about, and we don't even have to explain it.
Yeah.
But what are you talking about when you say Trump?
Well, what Paul was talking about in the last Trump was a very powerful statement that leads us to the fulfillment of all the reasons the trumpet was sounded in the Old Covenant. You know, we've taken people through and showed them where that all scripture was fulfilled. All the feast days have been fulfilled. So much. And this is one that kind of gets left out because we don't really take Paul seriously about the statement, the last trump. And in his discussion about this, in the New Testament, he is referring specifically to the cessation of hostilities. But even so, he is letting us know that, you know, that the sound of the trump is over with. And, of course, in the declaration of that cessation of hostilities came with a new declaration, the gospel of peace. This is what the angels got excited about. This story is so beautiful, Barris, just in and of itself. And then, of course, in Hebrews, Paul writes again and says that you have not come to the mount that might be touched or that burned with fire, nor to the sound of a trumpet. So we have not come to the sound of a trumpet. Why? Because the last trump has sounded. For different reasons, the trump would be sounded. The one that we know for sure is because it's described in the scriptures as to which exactly what they did when the trumpet was sounded for judgment was coming. And that was one long, loud, solid, continuous blast of the trumpet. And so you can just imagine being in Israel and hearing the first sound of the trumpet and just hoping for any interval, any break in this long continued sound and blast, because the people knew when the trumpet sounded a certain way, it meant certain things were about to happen. That's why Paul said, if the trumpet makes an uncertain sound, people won't know what to do. The other implication of that is if we've had the last trump, there's nothing left to tell you what to do. Not only is there no law to tell you what to do, there's no trump to tell you what to do. The magnitude of this really is as big as the issue of the law and the prophets being fulfilled. And to go back and and us understand that all the trumpets have been fulfilled.
Okay, now you've taught on this before. What are you teaching that's new here?
Even though I've taught on it, I don't think anybody's ever heard it because I taught on it and it was recorded for radio broadcast. And that's been many years ago, and it's just it never went to broadcast. And is with any subject in the gospel revolution, these things really evolve. And in my study that I've been getting ready for to go to Calgary, I found some very interesting things, Barris, that I've never said before, and I think it's going to be good. Let me put it this way: I'm going to enjoy this. This is another one of those things. Whether if you enjoy it, that's fine. I'm going to enjoy the heck out of it. So
I can't wait to meet the people up there. You're teaching on the trump. What's Derek Hensel teaching on again?
Derek is going to be talking about the renewing of the mind. He did a little play on words there because he saw a real contrast between the renewing of the mind that the Christian community calls for and the renewing of the mind that he's been going through and will, based on my experience anyway, will be going through when he's 64. So he's only 30 now. Also, he will be covering the subject of belief. Derek's got some really wonderful insights about this bondage of belief, that there is real bondage in belief. And we've had a couple of discussions about it. I'm really excited about what he's going to be bringing. It really is powerful to understand that we are not called to a belief, we're called to knowledge. We're called to know something, not believe something.
Yeah, the first one to bring that to my attention was Bowler, Bowler Moyes. And how you doing, Bowler? It's good to have you on board in the GRs. But Bowler really hammered me about this, or at least it felt like he was hammering me at the time. And I have to say that I've come to the conclusion, well, firstly, it depends on the definition you give belief. I mean, when you cross the road, you believe that when the lights are green, a car's not going to hit you. That is believing, but it's also, and it certainly ain't knowledge, because you don't know a car ain't going to hit you. You just believe a car is not going to hit you. So I'm not all on board with this belief versus knowledging. However, I'm a lot more on board than I used to be about it.
Well, the difference really is, Barris, is a belief that leads you to think that your belief or your faith is going to change something for you. That is the belief that is in bondage.
If you extend that to the political realm, I'm not sure that's correct.
Well, I think it is. But
okay.
We're talking about a spiritual, that there's strictly a spiritual response to something. Not talking about doing something through politics or through anything else. It is just that you alone could believe something and it would affect change simply by your belief.
I believe that if I go out in the backyard and take my clothes off today, I'm going to get sunburned. I don't know that I am.
That's not the belief we're talking about.
But belief is belief is belief. I mean, red is red is red.
No, it isn't.
Oh, look,
there's a difference between believing something based on fact. It is a fact that if you go outside, the greatest likelihood in your pasty white, I'm sorry.
Oh,
in
your, oh in really? Your, my skinny white, I mean.
It is most likely that your Aussie butt's going to be burned. So You're not going strictly on a belief. We're talking about the belief that that is the same as faith,
yes.
Because belief and faith are the same things in the New Testament.
Yes.
We try to separate them, but we don't. And we go to Jesus's teaching on it to focus in on the belief that is bondage. And that is that if you could believe, then just say to this mountain, be thou plucked up and be cast into the sea. Go ahead. Give it a good shot. That belief is bondage.
Hang on. I used to teach that stuff. Are you telling me I used to be in bondage? Is that what you're trying to tell me?
Yes, and you put many people in bondage, Barris.
Oh, shoot. Thank you very much, William. So, now, build me up, Buttercup.
Repaint, repent, re-up, re-annie here.
Well, I'm going to do is say Bola Moyes has started the train for me. Maybe Derek can bring it into the station. I don't know. Here's what we're facing here. We're facing a cultural acceptance of the terms of a word, of a definition, and then we're trying to redefine it a la church terms.
I don't think we're trying to redefine it. I think we're trying to define it for what it was in the first place. The whole history of the gospel revolution is not to allow any religion to seize upon terminology that is biblical and to have presented it in a false light. And it is my persuasion that the term, that the issue of belief has been presented in a very false light. We're reclaiming for the text and the content and the context of the term belief and presented it in its original light, not a redefining. Now, it's a redefining for cultural situation that we're here in around the world and religious, but we're not trying to redefine it. We're trying to define it as it was presented.
So you're saying that, just bear with me.
They all got it wrong.
Yeah, bear with me here. You're saying that what I grew up to believe about the word belief, and let me ask you this, when it comes to belief, are you sure you believe that? Don't worry.
I don't believe anything.
Well, that's why am I wasting my time talking to you? You don't believe anything.
No, I don't.
Okay.
I know what I know, and I am's what I am's.
Oh, man. Oh, I just so want to say, I want to just smack you right now. You're frustrating me. But
you and a few other people, probably.
Okay.
Get in line, Paris. Get in line.
We're still on the topic of Calgary here. Yeah. I'm speaking about the place of perfect peace. Mm-hmm. I believe there is a place you can be perfectly at peace. Now, does that mean you're not going to be concerned about your financials? No, but it means that you can be in perfect peace. Mm-hmm. Does that mean that you are not going to be concerned because you have just been diagnosed with cancer? No, but I am saying there is a place where you can be in perfect peace. Mm-hmm. And the other topic I'll be addressing is believing that belief is not a belief at all. No. The other one is prior types and priorities. Michael L. Williams has latched on to the term that I somehow evolved called prototypes. Adam was a prototype. Christ is a prototype. But under those two prototypes, we have different priorities. So I'm going to be discussing what are those priorities and how do we fulfill those priorities. And to be honest with you, there's going to be a lot less to this than meets the eye. That's all I'm going to tell you. So that is pretty much covers what we all are doing up there.
Well, is that what you call lowering expectations to get a good
result? I had high expectations, but you changed them on me. You switched me out and you said, no, you can't do this. You can't do that. So, but I'll tell you what it will be. It'll be a healthy dose of CPR of the gospel of grace and peace.
Indeed,
it'll be the consistent, persistent, repetitive gestion of the gospel. It's as the more that we involve ourselves with the gospel, I am finding the freer we become. And
exactly, it is for freedom that Christ has set us free. We just don't seem to fully grasp the intent, but it is only for freedom that we were freed. It wasn't so we could serve. It wasn't so we could obey. It wasn't so we could believe. It wasn't so we could, you know, the list goes on and on as to what you might have been told in your respective denomination or non-denomination.
Yeah, that's what we said in the church I was raised. We're not a denomination. We are just, we're a New Testament church.
Yes, we are free. I remember so many years ago trying to introduce the subject of freedom, and I challenged the whole concept in the Word of Faith movement that we thought we were free because we didn't use stained glass. We used the whole thing fell apart, didn't it?
Much. I see my problem. Garrett, just keep talking, buddy. For those of you who are listening, we just sustained a small accident here, whereby
looked like a catastrophic failure to me.
The studio's falling apart. Help me! Just keep talking, Mike.
We thought we were free in the Word of Faith movement, and I remember when I first began to challenge this silly thought that we were free because, you know, we meet in metal frame buildings. We don't meet in churches in buildings with stained glass. We're free. And we don't use pews. We use hard metal chairs. We're free. And we don't use hymn books. We use overhead projectors. We're free. And we don't use velvet bags to pass around. We use Kentucky Fried Chicken buckets. So we're free. So I remember the first time that I challenged that concept of freedom. And we really thought we were free from all of that because we switched to KFC buckets.
But I tell you what, if you or I had stepped out of bloody line, 1 inch.
Yeah.
And we did. Mm-hmm. And guess what happened? I've been thrown out of one church. It was the Christian Outreach Center in Ipswich, Queensland, just for those of you who are listening. And yes, they do excommunicate people, but they don't do it the normal way. You don't get a letter or appear before the elders board. What happens is a pastor takes you out on the street in a public bus stop seat and say, Beres, I think that we have come to a place where we need to part company.
He shoves you out in the street.
No Matthew 18 stuff, you know, and I used to be big on old Matthew 18. Listen, if someone has something against you, we'll bring a brother and talk to him and then take it before the whole church. No, you do it in bloody secret.
Yeah, exactly.
And if we went 1 inch out of line, Michael, and we were free, all right, we were freed from any future responsibility is what we were freed from.
Exactly. It was a pseudo-freedom, really. I mean, it really was. The Word of Faith movement was a pseudo-freedom. There was no freedom from law.
I do not know one church where there is some degree of, if you leave us, you are leaving God.
Well, exactly. And, of course, we get all of that from John in his letter where he said if they had been of us, they wouldn't have left us. But because they left us, they're of the devil.
Now, is that not what you were talking about last week? You said, if this, then that?
Yes. Yeah. Post hoc, ergo, propter hoc. And John was really good at post hoc, ergo, propter hoc.
Wasn't he, though? But are you exclusive brethren say, if you eat with people who are not of our faith and fellowship, then you will be thrown out. If you do this, then you are worthy of being thrown out. If you do that, God won't like you. Of course, we don't like you.
In fact, I just read all the way through 1st, 2nd, 3rd John again just about 3 or 4 days ago. And, man, after you've been absorbed in Paul's teaching, to go back and read all the way through that again, and I really encourage people to do it, it's shocking. It is just shocking.
What you're saying is when you look at some of these things which have formed our belief system, when you reread it without the bifocals of tradition, you suddenly see things and say, what? How did I miss that before?
Well, you really do. And goodness gracious, the us and them, that's what you're going to get. Let me tell you, before you ever read 1 John, 2 John, 3 John again.
You are.
It is us and them. Us and them. And let me tell you, when John says to love the brethren, he means the brethren.
And them is never, ever better than us or even equal to us. Us are always better than them.
In fact, they are of the devil.
Oh, boy.
That's what John says. They're not of us, so they are of the devil.
Yeah.
It gets really wild. Go back to 1 John, 2 John, and 3 John.
They went out from us because they were never of us.
They were never of us. It's obvious that they were devious little devils because they left, and therefore they never were here because they left. Post hoc, ergo, propter hoc.
If that, then this.
Yeah, it really is full of that. Got to go back and read it again.
You know, I remember something Gene Scott used to say: all poodles are dogs, but not all dogs are poodles. If that, then this is simply a cheap manipulative way to coerce simple minds,
yeah,
or at least minds who aren't given to thinking.
Yeah, it's forced thought. Yeah. And that's my phrase for it, is forced thought. But I tell you, I got so much more sold out on the gospel by reading 1st, 2nd, and 3rd John. Or 1 John, 2 John, 3 John, I guess I could say.
Hey, what do you think this is?
I don't know. Is that your little flea that you're going to start a circus with?
No, this is a washer. When the studio just disintegrated a moment ago. Oh, this is left over.
Well, let's hope it's not a body part.
Oh, dang. And this is too. Oh, no.
Pieces. Oh, well.
Talking about which, Jimmy and Carrie McCollum paid a visit to the studio the other day, and which is their old place. But we had a great time together, and in that, we had Jimmy and I were having a conversation, and he was saying how some of his relatives don't want to talk to him, and and I was reminding him that freedom threatens people.
Yeah, it does indeed. Goodness, it is for freedom that we've been set free, folks. Everything that we are motivated to say, it is to establish in your heart and your mind that you are free. We have absolutely no other. And let me tell you something. When you take that drastic of a departure from religious thinking, the person or persons preaching that are not going to benefit from telling everybody that they're free. It's just because we've got so used to being manipulated and controlled into obedience and service and giving and all of those things. And now you've got a voice out there that's telling you there is no other motivation for freedom than freedom. That you didn't get set free so you could. It's freedom. That's the end all, and that's the be all.
Do you believe that? I mean, do you actually believe that?
I know it.
You what? I just want to remind our family about Facebook. If you are a Facebook fan, then hit the search bar in Facebook and search for Friends of Mike Williams. There aren't a lot of us. He doesn't have a lot of friends, but those of us who are there.
I really don't.
We meet under.
I'm bereft of friends.
Oh, you're so bereft. You poor orphan. Those of us who are there meet under the umbrella of Friends of Mike Williams and the Gospel Revolution.
They're friends with each other, but they're not friends with me.
No, they. Do you think they want to be known for that? They don't want to be known for being. Come on. Now, listen, if.
I do understand. Yes, I really do.
Do you believe it?
I wouldn't want to be a friend with me either. Yeah.
If you want any of our hundreds of free products, go to www.gospelrevolution.com, where we have over 2,500 hours of free audio available. I'm telling you, we have got thousands of hours of free audio available. Just go there and fill your boots. You can download any of our years of podcasts, decades of teachings, or you can tune into the Gospel 24/7 on Gospel Revolution Radio, thanks to Gospel Revolution executive producer Marcel Roos in the Netherlands. Yep, that's right. The Gospel comes out of the Netherlands 24/7, and you'll be hearing all the Gospel of grace and all the Gospel of peace. And I don't care if you believe that, know that, or anything else. It just is.
And all you have to do, Barris, is go on the website and click at the top, Radio. It is. I couldn't believe it. Do you know I had never heard our radio station?
Yeah, well, you don't get out much, mate.
Well, I don't, and it's because you had to type in www.blah blah blah.
It was such a pain to get it, wasn't it?
And now, what do? You click on Radio at the top of the homepage.
While you're there, watch some of Jeff Robertson's videos. This week, Mike, he put out a couple of videos. Your belief is irrelevant. Oh, get out of here, Jeff. What is this? Your belief is irrelevant. And he put out, what seems right is actually wrong.
Mm-hmm. And it was a very good video. Good thought. And readjusting people's perception of what the Bible actually says and what it don't say. If we've done anything, we've probably shown people more of what the Bible don't say, at least equal portions of what it does not say, as we have this is what it does say. It really has just been an amazing journey, Barris, of this unteaching of Christian doctrine, and it's actually been relatively simple. It would have to be for me to do it, and it really has been a journey.
Can I just butt in? I think that is exactly what has made this ministry so attractive to me. It's not that you're simple. I mean, you are. We know that. you appear to believe. Believe that. I know that. But it is that you seem to have the capacity to present it in terms simple enough for the average guy to say, "Oh my gosh, that's right! I've been trying to put that into words for so many years, and I just knew it was true." But
this has just been so obvious. And number two, I became very persuaded early on that if it was the truth, everybody already knew it anyway. That this was almost by spiritual DNA, if you will, that the gospel is intuitive to every human being. I don't care where you're born, what religion you're under, or non-religion. I think the gospel is intuitive. And I think we come prepackaged with a understanding that is deep in us. Now, we still need to hear the gospel to connect with that. Obviously, or people would have just popped up with it along the way. So the and once we get that, this consistent, persistent, repetitive use of this is just so helpful. It's needful and it's beneficial. Anytime. I've never had a single time, Barris, that I was experiencing any kind of blah or any kind of negative feelings going on, that if I didn't get in a conversation with you or one of the other gospel revolutionaries or just clicked on a PowerCast and listened to it, it didn't change everything. I mean, it really has consistently, persistently, and repetitively changed my disposition within a very short period of time. I personally have never had it to fail. I've never gotten to the end of a teaching or the end of a time when I was teaching or listening or communicating about the gospel that it has not had a very positive impact on the way that I deal with things. It's been really amazing.
Mike, this month is a pledge month, and
it is,
and we're hoping to get rich. I'm hoping in the studio to
we got our pockets open.
Yeah, we do. I want a new pool. I mean, I'm in Alabama now.
To replace the old.
No, Oh, I didn't have an old one. Yeah, I'm in Alabama now, mate. So I mean, I need a pool. This is a need, and it's a God-given need, because God wouldn't have put me in Alabama if He didn't want me to have a pool. Hang on. Well, Ugo Proca Hoka Hoka Poka. That's what I believe anyway.
I know what an Alabama pool is. It's something that the cows drink out of.
I'll settle for that. 100 degrees in the car yesterday. 100 degrees. That's close to 38 or 40 degrees back home for you Australians. This is a pledge drive right through to the end of the month. And for this pledge drive, the goal is 1,000 in new monthly pledges, and I'll give you a swim in my pool. we have created three new categories for pledge members. They are official sponsor, producer, and executive producer of Gospel Revolution Productions. Now, by the way, the certificates look absolutely spiffy. They look wonderful, and we'll be sending them out to you on really cheaply printed Chinese paper, and you'll be able to put it up on the wall. And I'm telling you, any guest you have over, you won't have to start the conversation. They'll just ask you what this is all about, and away you go. Any new pledges of $10 to $49 a month will receive a certificate from the Gospel Revolution as an official sponsor. One-time donors of $100 or more will also receive official sponsor certificates. New pledges of over $50 a month. Now, come on. I think I might have said this on the last pledge, on the last podcast, but I'm not rich. We don't have a bunch of money, but I give more than that away every month, and I'm looking for other ways to give that much again away. And I've just spoken to somebody in Africa, and I plan on giving. I just plan on doubling that up. Look, if this gospel has helped you in any way, come on, guys. Don't be stingy. Shallow pockets, long arms. That's what we're asking for here. Does it sound like we're asking for your money? Heck, yes, we are. Aren't we, Mike? Yeah. And then if you find your way clear to give over $100 a month or more in new pledges, we will receive executive producer status and certificates. You can put that on your business cards. And I'm telling you, when people ring up and ask, is he an executive producer? If you look at all the TV shows, you look at the bottom, it says executive producer. That is the person who financed the show. And we will absolutely corroborate that you are an executive producer of Gospel Revolution Productions.
One thing I would love to see, Barris, is people with their certificates, whether they've framed them, put them on the wall, or
take a
whatever.
Photo?
Take a picture of your pretty self with your certificate either in hand or on the wall behind you. And if it's you and your mate, then take a picture. Both of you, we'd really love to see some photos of that.
We'll put it up on the web.
These things are going out, but we're not got any. Yeah, we got room on our massive website now to put things.
It.
So, so get us some photos going, folks, and we'd love to let the world see all your beautiful faces.
Once again, anyone who feels that they might have a book inside them but have never written a book yet. Would you like to practice? Our Randy French needs some editors. And so if you think that you might be able to edit a book, why don't you call Jeff Robertson on the number at the end of the show, and we will take care of that, and we'll make sure that you get put in touch with Randy French, our audio engineer extraordinaire. Mike, I was listening to Glenn Klein's commentaries on, I don't even know what it was called, but it was on a radio show he just produced this week. Uh-huh. And I loved it. I mean, this Glenn is fearless.
It has been wonderful to watch what has happened to Glenn and for Glenn and by Glenn. This is really amazing, folks. I tell you what, this is Glenn and I have known each other for a couple of decades, and it has been a wonderful and an eventful relationship that has remained regardless.
Never boring, right?
Never has been boring, and to watch where Glenn is now is just, for me, just one of the biggest thrills of my life. I am just so pleased for him and with him. It really is quite amazing.
And he's had some amazing guests on his show in just, 9 months or a year or something that he's been going there. He's had, Speaker of the House, Paul Ryan. He's had politicians. This last week he had a couple of fascinating people. And look, if I was to encourage you to listen to any radio show other than the Gospel Revolution 24/7 radio show that you can click on, it would be Glenn Klein.
Yeah, and you can listen live to a show, and I love the music. I mean, if you want a good radio station to listen to that plays really, really good music, then this one would be the one.
Hey, listen, I just took us all totally off the track here. Pledge Drive.
Mm-hmm. Put us back on track,
well,
Jack.
Well, work your way.
The pledge drive is going well. I believe it's going well. I talked with Jeff just the other day, and it is slow, but it is consistent, persistent, and some repetitiveness to it also. So if your phone is ringing and you hear that little voice telling you it's Jeff Robertson, there's no need to ignore it. Because he will not be ignored. That's just all there is to it. So, folks, thank you for those of you that have contributed. Jeff's going to give us an update on all of that on this show. And we really are grateful. Goodness gracious, we are very grateful. There's so much that we are able to get done. And we might as well go to Jeff now and get an update. Jeff Robertson. Tell us what thou knowest.
Well, thanks, Mike. Here's where we are so far in our summer pledge drive. Summer. It's summer. All right. We've got Dale Van Sickle in Lady Lake, Florida. Pastor Ted Winslet in Decatur, Alabama. Pastor Pat Winslet of Decatur, Alabama. Walter Wilson in Selma, Alabama. Cookie Davy Duck in Castor, Alberta, Canada. Bob Hines in McDonough, Georgia. Bob Vacanti in Ottertail, Minnesota. Elke Morris in Winnipeg, Manitoba. Robert Collier in Longview, Texas. Paul Havard in Cheltenham, Gloucestershire, England. Brad and Holly Wilson in Queen Creek, Arizona. Billy Thompson in Wachuca City, Arizona. Pep Washburn in Marshfield, Wisconsin. Tom and Linda Wilby in Fredericton, New Brunswick, Canada. Anonymous in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. Mel Martin in Gainesville, Georgia. Lee Dick in Kelowna, British Columbia. Richard and Pat Salonen in Laurium, Michigan. Bernie Rouse in Cadillac, Michigan. And that rounds out the list so far. So thanks, Mike, and next week I'll update you on who else has contributed.
Thank you, Jeff. Appreciate it. Goodness gracious. Of the staff members we have, I don't know if anybody can do this.
Oh, no, Jeff. I agree. I thoroughly concur. And I don't...
Yeah, you won't ever be put in
I'm praying
position,
for a long life for Jeff, because I sure as heck don't want to be put in his position.
Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness. Yeah, it's, it really is. It is quite amazing. I am probably the worst, person, in this entire ministry when it comes to raising funds. I will most likely talk you out of it rather than talk you into it, because I got to make sure you're not giving out of compulsion. You're not giving because that, you think God's going to do something. You're not giving because, of anything other than the fact that you want other people to hear this.
I had somebody tell me the other day, and I'm not going to tell you who it was. It was Derek, that I had guilted them into giving. and I'm going to tell you that nobody can guilt you into giving. Nobody can guilt you into stopping. Because guilt ain't, it just ain't in our, it's not in our quiver. We don't even understand guilt. We, and yet, I say that, and yet, I don't care that I guilted him into giving, because it all comes down to one thing. Exactly what Mike just said. Consider, just consider that there are millions of other people out there. You know, I was talking with Derek the other day, and Derek was asking me something, and now, what he was asking me isn't that important, but my response was this. Even if I stopped believing in God tomorrow, even if I became an agnostic tomorrow, I would probably still work here at the Gospel Revolution. Now, that's if Michael had me after I actually say what I'm about to say. Because, you know, he doesn't like non-believers. He just like likes non-knowers, if you know what I mean. But I told this guy, I said, Derek, I would still work and give all that I have for the gospel revolution simply because we stand between people who are trapped and people who are not trapped. And that, I mean, that is, how do you put a price on that? How do you say, gee, that's worth money? You can't even say it's worth money. It's worth me. For me, and I say to people with regard to social welfare, I say, don't give your money. It's America. Yeah, we don't need your money. We need you. Give yourself. And I would still give myself because this gospel is just, it is the power of God unto the wholeness of the soul.
Exactly. It is indeed, Barris, and I for the last year or so, I am I'm reminded in my own heart, in my own mind, pretty much on a daily basis, of a reality that is that really for me is profound, and that reality is that I exist on planet Earth without a single Christian thought in my brain. Now, I have a lot of gospel thoughts. In fact, it stays there all the time. But there's not one single gospel thought that would correlate to a Christian thought that I have. So it truly is the absence of Christian thought that is the greatest expression of my freedom. So not to be confused with a lack of gospel thought. I'm constantly in gospel thought, but I still can't get over the fact, and it is a fact. I have no Christian thoughts that go through my head. I have no post hoc ergo propter hoc go through my head. It just doesn't exist. Now, I didn't have a goal to get it out. I didn't know it needed to be gotten out. I didn't go to a seminar on how to get it out. Like I said, I didn't even know it was needed. I just woke up realizing I don't have those thoughts anymore. I don't even think Christianity. I just don't even think it. Now, you might say, well, Mike, what do you mean you don't think Christianity? Well, it's like Barris said the other day. Like guilt, it's just not in our quiver. It's not there to use. It's not there being used against us, and we have no need to use it against someone else.
What do you put that down to, Mike?
Barris, you and I are very fortunate. Some folks may have to kind of make a plan to keep this CPR, the consistent, persistent, repetitive nature of the gospel, going on a daily basis. But you and I, we have to do this. We have to do this once a week. And the have to of it is so rewarding. The thing that we get out of it once it's done, I always feel better after a show. I always am clearer. I've got anything that was weighing on me is just gone. And there are things that can weigh on me. Thank God, it's like you said, though, that nothing can take away that state of peace, regardless, even if there are things going on that are not peaceful. There really is a place of peace. There really is. I've got it. I know I've got it. I know I've got it because I never had it. That's why I know I got it.
I want to tell you how I do it. On my Android phone, I have, and I'm sure you can get the same on an iPhone, but on my Android phone, I have a little app called Maple. Maple is an MP3 player, or it's actually a media player. And what it does is I listen to probably about 100 hours a week, Mike, of various MP3s. Now, I don't spend 100 hours doing it. I spend probably about 60 hours doing it. Because Maple, what it'll do is you can throw an MP3 on there, and you simply download the MP3s from the web. You go to Gospel Revolution. I've got a couple of standard podcasts I listen to because I want to expand my mind. I also listen to audio books about history and audio books about all kinds of things. But I'm trying to expand my mind all the time, and Maple will allow me to do that because it takes 1 hour and it cuts it down to maybe 35 minutes because it has a speeding up facility on it. Most people speak at a pace that you can actually listen to them at least one and a half times their normal speed. So that's how I do it. And I just keep this stuff coming into me because it's the only way I know. Look, if you are on Facebook, I don't care who you are or what you believe. If you're on Facebook, you cannot help, if you have any sense at all, to be carried away with the foolishness that seems to permeate the world in which we live. The only thing that saves me is the gospel. And that's how I do it, Mike.
And that's what each individual has to do, Barris, is you've got to find a way to save yourself.
Mm.
And if you don't put some effort into hearing the gospel, you're going to be lost. I'm telling you, we just live in a world that is, you're being constantly bombarded with other things, and the pull and the drag, both, that can be put on you. I've gotten to where here recently, I listen to very little news. I'll get on the news just to see if there's anything breaking. And the problem is, you get on almost any news network, and no matter what's been happening for the last 2 days, they say breaking news, and it's like, no, that broke 2 days ago.
Yeah, breaking news: gasoline prices down to $2. Yeah, really.
Yeah. So you know, I just begin to, you know, it begins to too much absorption. You know, once you've got the facts, you've got the facts. And I used to be a real news hound, where that basically I just turned on a news station, which are several to choose from, which I've participated in all of them. And but after a while, it's just like, I don't care whether you're right or wrong. I'm not looking for that. I can't listen anymore. It's too much of the same thing over and over and over again. So if they know there's something about consistent, persistent, and repetitive, because they certainly do it, oh my gosh, do they ever do it? You'll hear the very same news every hour on the hour over and over for at least a 48-hour news cycle. And until there can become, you know, us means us, not like what John was talking about when he talked about, you know, make sure you love the brethren. He was making sure you didn't love the
Here is your homework, family. So. Your homework between now and next week is read 1st, 2nd, and 3rd John.
Exactly. And compare it to the gospel. Oh, my goodness. So, but see, these things, and I was reading through 1st, 2nd, and 3rd John, and I saw where a lot of this mentality is coming from, this us against them mentality. It's in 1 John. It's in 2 John. It's in 3 John.
Well, if you read 2 Peter, them are going to be all burned up. Thank you, Jesus. They're all going to be burned up.
Whole chapters on just this most vicious and violent end to humanity. And at least those on the other side.
God, that Paul had a different message.
Oh, thank you, Paul. Thank you. Thank you, Paul. Thank you. Thank you, sir. Thank you, sir. Here, John's talking about those who are of the devil and those who aren't of the devil. And Paul's declaring to us that the work of the devil has been completely destroyed, that it's done with. This is, you know, you want to get back to the roots of it. Where this all should have terminated was 2,000 years ago. But this perversion of gospel truth has been just amazing.
Why didn't it?
Well, that's a real good question. And I think, number one, it's because of freedom. You know, we want to accept freedom, but we don't want to accept the parts of freedom that cause people to be able to do things like what the disciples did with the gospel after the resurrection of Jesus. It was because they were free to do it.
This us and them mentality seems to permeate our whole culture. I don't care if it's dog clubs that like poodles or those that like Alsatians. I don't care if it's liberal versus conservative. I don't care if it's Catholic versus Protestant. But it's the whole thing is us and them.
I was taught to reduce all fractions to the lowest common denominator. And we've got to find that lowest common denominator. What is it in the human race? Well, I think it's in the area that we've most exploited to the opposite of that.
Being?
And being the spirit, that spiritually we have a common denominator between us. And from that, that's how, quote, problems get solved. It's that you find the lowest common denominator, and from that point you begin
now,
to work.
Is this what I saw in Nelson Mandela?
Well, it sure seems to be there. I've watched Invictus. I almost watch it, quote, religiously. Goodness, if you want to see someone who found an equality across the divide, my goodness.
After decades, every single day, he had to wake up in a filthy little cell, eating probably filthy food, with every reason to hate them. And yet the us in him seemed to refuse to go there.
It really did, and certainly had the opportunity to go to us and them. And but he was able to identify that as the true enemy, was the us and them.
Oh, say that again.
He identified the true enemy. And it wasn't the Afrikaners who were his jailers. It was the us and them.
Mm.
And all it takes, folks, is one person to decide that we ain't going there. We're just not going there. I cannot tell you a situation that now exists that if somebody decides, you're going to bring great change if you decide that that's not going to exist, us and them.
Now, let me just interrupt here because you just cut me short in something that is not going to go to air. And I want to tell our family, I am still navigating my way through the best ways of presenting things. And I came up with a concept a couple of minutes ago, which you haven't heard because I deleted it from this podcast, where Mike said to me, I don't think we're going to go there because I don't see how that's going to be positive for the message that that is going to unite humanity. And so that's it. That's it. I'll just shut up now. But see, we're all on a learning curve. We are all, and that's what I'm presenting in Calgary. We're all discovering how to be God in the earth. We are just,
exactly.
We're just. Okay, I think that's a good place for us to change course here, Mike. So I'm going to read an email from Wayne Card. And Wayne Card is a gospel revolutionary who has listened to, he's a bit like me, he listens to a wide, very Catholic, in the classical sense of the word, range of concepts and ideas. See, that's the thing. Once you're free, you're free. He said he wrote to a guy called Steve McVeigh. Steve McVeigh is a guy who wrote a book, a new book, and something, I think it's called Beyond an Angry God. And Steve McVeigh wrote back to him and said, "Hi, Wayne, thanks for your email expressing your questions. You're correct that you don't understand my view of hell." Obviously, Wayne said what he thought Steve was saying. "If I understood hell as you've suggested, I would be driven to the same conclusion as you've reached. I'd encourage you to get a copy of my book, which explains why I believe that the reality of hell and the inclusion of all humanity are not mutually exclusive. Now, what he's talking about there is the reality of hell as we all know it and the inclusion of all humanity are not mutually exclusive, is if you believe that hell is for reparative damage, it's to repair damage done to the human soul that needs to be cleaned up before you include people in God's salvation. He goes on to say, I've gone to great length to explain it in the book, so I won't give you an abbreviated answer here, other than to say that God's love is hell to those who reject it. Here is a concept that people can reject God, and in some way they suffer a response. He snatches nobody out of Christ, nor does he even punish. However, sin does punish, not God, sin. Now, here in redemptionism, in the gospel revolution, as we say, sin was done away with on the cross. And the problem, of course, is, let me just continue. He says, I hope you'll get the book, and after you've read it, let me know what you think. Now, come on, Steve McVeigh. What you're not doing is answering this question, but you're saying, hey, listen, put another $5 in my pocket, and then I'll talk to you. If you put $5 in my pocket, I'll talk to you. I mean, what's the difference between that and Benny Hinn? Okay, he says, I traveled the Universalist's pathway enough to know it well, and after studying the Cappadocian Fathers, come on, Steve, now you're throwing out terms that most people don't even know. But okay, let's say let's give you the benefit of the doubt. After studying the Cappadocian Fathers, understanding of the subject of inclusion, hell, etc., I now find myself at the place where my views align more with them than with a Universalist position. Well, we'll get into that in a moment, because the Cappadocian Fathers were affirmed Universalists. He goes on to say, I feel an affinity for the theological perspective of Trinitarianism as posited by T.F. Torrance and others who championed the early church view. No, T.F. Torrance didn't champion the early church view, because Trinitarianism was not the early church view. But don't worry, Steve, we'll get to that. Thanks again for writing. I hope this helps answer your question. I realize it is a very incomplete answer. Heck yes. And for that reason, hope you'll get the book. Well, why wouldn't you? Blessings to you. So, you know, for the 10 or 15 bucks he's going to spend on the book, he wants to give our friend Wayne blessings. Okay, let's look at Wayne's response to that. I got a response from Steve McVeigh, which is included below. You've just heard it. You'll see that he mentions the Cappadocian Fathers' understanding of inclusion. This is not something I'm aware of. And Trinitarianism, again, I don't know what he means by that term. Also, he speaks of sin punishing as opposed to God doing it. Brackets, poor sin. It always seems to get punished twice in the minds of Christians. I love you, Wayne. I realize
that is a profound statement.
Oh, isn't it, though? I realize, Wayne says, that he probably doesn't have the time to properly address my questions in an email. No, actually, Wayne, he wants you to buy the book. But I'm not excited about having to purchase his book, Beyond an Angry God, in order to fully understand where he's coming from on these issues. I'm with you, buddy. I do appreciate that he responded, and so graciously, in fact. Okay. I'd be interested in what you, Mike, and Beres might have to say on this. It seems to me that Cappadocian Fathers' thinking on inclusionism and Trinitarianism might not be a bad study for one of the podcasts. Anyway, I thought I'd let you know that Steve wrote back, take care, Jeff. All the best, Wayne. And Jeff wrote back and said, I told Wayne I wouldn't care to debate McVeigh or read anything about the Cappadocian Fathers or Trinitarianism, but that I would forward this on to you guys in case it might be some fodder for you in a future PowerCast. And this may well derail our main topic today, Michael, but I've got a few thoughts. What are your thoughts to begin with?
Twister.
Oh, now listen, you got to tell people what you're... Last podcast you said Twister, and I only knew it because I played it at my 21st birthday party in Australia and never seen it since.
Everybody knows what Twister is. It is at least a couple of people on a piece of plastic that's got red, green, and blue and yellow dots, I believe. And you spin the dial and right hand blue. So everybody has to find a blue for the right hand. Now you can't use one dot except for one hand. So in other words, if somebody else beats you there, then you got to find another
blue dot. But you can use your left foot for the blue dot, right?
No, you cannot. No, it's it has to be the hand and the dot.
Somebody beats you to that dot, you're done.
No, there's other blue dots. There's many of this same color, but you're going to have, that's why they call it Twister. You're going to have to twist around.
So I'm excuse me being really blunt here, but I'm a guy and the first thing in my mind is what I'm going to have to stick my arm between somebody else's legs in order to get to a blue dot.
Exactly. I think that's why the game was made.
Oh, come on.
So
let me guess. This game was invented in America, right?
I don't have a clue, but I wouldn't put it past a bunch of Aussies either.
sounds rushing, yeah. It really does.
But the reason I say Twister is because, goodness gracious, folks, when you this is why I made the comment earlier, not knowing we were going here. What we try to do is reestablish what these things meant in the first place. What does hell really mean? What does sin really mean? What was the conclusion of sin? What was hell about? Now, whether it was the Cappadocian fathers or the Athenian fathers or the whoever fathers it was, it doesn't make any difference who it was. Our intent is that we're not redefining these things. We are defining them. We're going back to the text. Why do people have to get one degree removed from Scripture to come up with what they think? I don't get it.
Of course, it justifies us.
Oh, and self-justification. I'm pretty well done with it, folks. I don't care where I see it. But there's two things that you don't have to play Twister with, Brother Steve. You just don't have to. Sin doesn't exist. The blue dot is gone. And the yellow dot's gone, too. Sin ended at the cross. Paul explained it very clearly, and the prophets foretold it.
Where did Paul explain it?
The book of Romans, the book of Hebrews, the book of Galatians. You buy the book.
Yeah, I bought that book, and then somebody says, I read the end of the book, and we all win, and I didn't.
Oh, goodness. So, yes, but we understand the confusion. I certainly understand the confusion. And, folks, let me tell you, if you're on the other side of the cross and you're trying to figure out what the positive meaning of hell is, you're in a hell of a mess, let me tell you. You're just in a hell of a mess if you're going to try to figure out what hell means on this side of the cross, when hell didn't mean what it meant, what everybody thought it meant before the cross, as taught in the New Testament through the mistranslation of words. And oh my gosh, it is just ridiculous. So you're trying to resolve two subjects here, Barris, that aren't subjects anymore.
You know what a subject is? It is something that is subject to something mm-hmm. else. An object is something which just is. And hence we have the English words subjective and objective. And it seems to me you are pointing out the difference.
I didn't know that, but thank you for attributing that brilliance to me.
Just go with it.
Well, these issues, these two subjects are, goodness, folks. And there's more people who especially have taught about hell that don't agree with the gospel revolution on much of anything, honestly. But we direct people to their websites if they want to learn about this issue, tentmaker.com. I mean, goodness gracious, we recommend this site for somebody who wants to understand hell in its proper perspective as to what these words meant. He does a very exhaustive job on this. Now, he disagrees with most everything that I say, but that doesn't mean you shouldn't read what the guy's got to say, especially on a subject like this. Almost nobody agrees with the gospel revolution on the subject of sin, Barris.
Why not?
Well, the reason they don't agree with us is they don't know that sin was done away with at the cross. Now, you got to know that. And again, which goes back to our old subject, believe or know. Well, this is not something I believe. It's something I know, because there's knowledge on this. Paul didn't extend this and said, please believe this, please believe this, please believe this. He extended this as an absolute fact that sin was done away with at the cross. It is over. The only reason that we can affirm that Paul was correct about his assertions about sin being completely done away with is the prophets foretold the time when sin would be done away with, like Daniel chapter 9, which, because they do not accept that sin was done away with, they delay Daniel 9:23 off into a future date when there'll be no such thing as transgression. There'll be no such thing as sin. Which Daniel the prophet foretold. So, folks, just get off the twister pad. You don't have to do it. Goodness gracious. It's exhausting. There is no place in the gospel revolution where you have to leave this subject over here and now go talk about this one. Exclusive from the one you just finished. The gospel is one big, beautiful picture. It is absolutely amazing. It is so beautiful. It's so intricate that it has an absolute fractal nature to it. That whether you're looking at a big picture of the gospel or an intricate little picture of the gospel, you see exactly the same picture over and over and over and over and over again.
My mum had a tapestry up on the wall, and it came from the Middle East. It was a Middle Eastern scene with camels and whatnot. And her brother brought it back for her from the First World War. By the time I got it, it was pretty moth-eaten, and I disposed of it. But when you turned it over to the back, it made no sense at all. It was just a whole bunch of threads, you know, just loose ends coming out, and you couldn't see a darn thing. Back in the day, we told people, well, that was what our lives were like, and our lives just didn't make a lot of sense. But when you turn it over to the front, you see a picture, and that's how God does our lives. Well, it was a nice analogy, but I'm going to suggest that that is exactly what the gospel is like. You can look at it from the back, or you can look at it from the front. But either way, you're going to see different pictures.
Yeah.
You're just going to say, if you want to look at it from, hey, listen, I'll pull this thread out, and I'm going to go with that thread. And no, I'll get this. No, this thread's mine. No, I've got this thread over here. No, I've got that thread. You're going to end up with the multiple thousands of Christian sects that now exist.
Yeah.
Look at the front. You got the gospel.
Yes, exactly. And folks, don't get bewildered at just the simplicity of just looking at the picture. Don't let people drag you off into trying to explain things that were resolved at the cross. Now, I am sure that Steve McVeigh is a wonderful man. He's got some great things to say about grace. But when you fail to see the knowledge that Paul had, far superior, I have to tell you, far superior to the knowledge that the disciples had about all of this.
I thought Paul was a disciple.
Paul never fit in the disciple program. He wasn't around to be discipled by Jesus. Now, definitely, he was an apostle, but his writings, goodness gracious, folks, I remember the days of playing Twister between, First John and, Romans chapter 5. I remember trying to play Twister.
You know what I'm going to bring with me to Calgary, Canada?
A Twister game, yeah.
I'm just going to stick it up on the wall next to the GR symbol. It's going to be Twister.
I remember playing Twister with James, chapter 2, and Romans chapter 4. I remember being told how that I can't dismiss one because of the other, that somehow these, and let me tell you something, it'll twist your brain into a knot. And that's why I'm so glad I don't have any Christian thoughts anymore. There's no knots in my brain, for goodness sakes. Goodness gracious. I am so glad to not spiritualize everything that comes along because of these twisted knots of Christianity in my thinking. They're gone. So I don't spiritualize daily life. What is spiritual is me. What is spiritual is Barris. What is spiritual is you. That's what is spiritual. It's not what happens to you. It's not whether or not I'm supposed to move to Florida or not. You know, I didn't even think about it. My gosh, you know, I made a decision to move to Florida, and it came just kind of out of the spur of the moment. And you know what? I didn't give one thought as to whether or not it was God's will, whether it was not this was going to be God's purpose. I looked at the situation. I knew what I wanted. I saw how good of a deal it was. The situation and the relationships that I already have established there. And it was like, why not? I'm going to do this. Now, folks, all of that. Now, this is a major change in my life. And I didn't have a single Christian thought about it. Not one. Now, my my ex-wife, Hazel, just had a family member to move. And I know none of them will ever hear this, that's for sure. But they're moving from one state to another state. Now, I've known these folks for, you know, better than 30 years. And they've moved about 5 times, to the best of my recollection. And every time they have moved, they had to hear from God about it. And boy, once they heard from God, they knew this is where they were going to go. And this is the place God had shown them to move, and they're moving, and the house was of God. The realtor was of God. It's just God, 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 God all the way around God. And now all of those 5 moves resulted in, this is the worst place we've ever lived in our lives. This is terrible. We're getting out of here. We got to leave this place behind.
It was all good until God changed his mind again.
Well, evidently. So
hey, guess what I just did?
What you just did?
Popped
your hawk.
No. While you were talking, I just ordered a game of Twister, and I'm going to stick it up as a flag at Calgary, man. It's going to go right up then. The plastic, you know, the mat. Yeah, it's
going, yes, absolutely.
It's going up there.
Let's do it. I think it's a very good description of Christian doctrine. Goodness gracious.
We should have it on our logo so that we can point to people and say, "You see the difference."
Exactly. You can either have a picture of a nice pastoral scene or a game of Twister. Which one do you want?
Well, I just bought it on Amazon, and it arrives here tomorrow.
So, yeah, and I've watched them over these years, and now they're getting ready to move again. And of course, Hazel was with them. She loves them. And they were just explaining how that it was God, 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 this is a God thing, and the realtor they found there was a Christian, so they know for sure it was God, the place was located in a certain place, so it's God, and so
right
it's
near
God.
A church.
Oh my goodness!
Golly,
it exhausted me to have Hazel to tell me about it, because I've seen this, you know, like I said, almost 5 times, if not 5 times. Wow. And these people, and they're sweet people. Goodness gracious, they really are. I come away from that, and I had this comparison. Of course, the fact that I'm moving this month, they moved this month, and
oh, that's got to be God, right?
It's just to show me the difference. God arranged all this just to show me the difference. So.
There you go.
No, thank goodness. Oh, my goodness. I am so grateful, Barrett, that I didn't have one of those thoughts. Now, could I? Man, if I went down through the list of the things that are so positive about this move, I could figure God into every
You could have been them.
I could have been them on steroids. For God's sake, they're moving to Tennessee. I'm moving to Florida.
Well, let me make a couple of quick points on Wayne's email. Wayne, we may do a future podcast on the Cappadocian Fathers and Trinitarianism. In fact, I think that wouldn't be a bad... It would be a good, like you said, suggestion for a PowerCast. But right now we're in the middle of a series. I don't know what we call it. It's going to be the five contrasts, I guess. Garden to garden, tree of the knowledge of good and evil to the tree Jesus died on, etc. Which is the topic Paul's we teaching. Were...
These are exclusively Paul's teachings. These are not teachings of the disciples.
And they are exclusively teachings which Christians cling to, and in this mindset of total, what do you call that mental problem when you've got two...
Schizophrenia?
Yeah, thank you, schizophrenia. Yeah, in total schizophrenia they teach, but we're going to be teaching the gospel view, redemptionism's view of the tree of knowledge and good... the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, to the tree Jesus died on. Maybe next week, but
yeah,
we might even get to it later.
it's going to be some good stuff, though, folks.
So. Oh, it's great stuff. But I'm just going to make a couple of notes. Sorry, Kate, go.
We did get through our first one.
We managed that in good sharp time, didn't we?
Yeah, and it was, and what a good topic it turned out to be. So we went into this from the garden to the garden. So it started in a garden, it ended in a garden. And we are our next one is it started on a tree, it ended on a tree. And the comparisons on here are just so powerful, folks. We're going to get into some really good stuff. And again, the emphasis here also is not just this teaching that Paul brought out. It is that it is... exclusively taught by Paul. It's as though the disciples had no clue about these subjects whatsoever. So, yeah, that's what's coming up. But we still, Barris, I still want to hear what you have to say about our – we're explaining why we're not going to do what we were going to do, and now we can go back. Now we can go back and let Barris finish his comments on this letter.
Of course,
Link.
I'm so erudite and intelligent in my – my brain is indeed the size of a small planet, and
indeed.
Yeah. Okay, well, just a couple of things. Trinitarianism is. I'll just explain a couple of phrases in these emails, and then we'll leave it until a future time when Wayne we shall cover this. Trinitarianism is the doctrine that Jesus is not God. God is not the Holy Spirit. The Holy Spirit is not Jesus. However, they are all God. Now, it was hotly disputed. It is generally accepted. And that by way of threats and enforcements up to and including death by execution. Mm. Now,
That's just so amazing.
Now, we both want to tell you, the Gospel Revolution wants to tell you, that we are not in this to try and destroy your beliefs. Mm-hmm. This is not what we are about. If you believe in the Trinity, and and I have all my life, and I don't have it. I have no reason not to believe in the Trinity now. But if you're a Trinitarian, stay.
Mm-hmm.
Keep being a Trinitarian. The gospel of grace and peace, if it has anything to speak to that, will speak to you about that.
Mm-hmm.
So this is not something that, you know, we want to, we're not, you know, we aren't bullfighters in a ring.
Mm-hmm.
What we are is lovers, not exactly in a bed, but we're lovers. We want to love you into understanding that the gospel of grace and peace is universal and includes you.
And we're seeking together. You know, it's not that we have sought thou, for, therefore thou must follow us. We seeketh also. And if there's anything people have learned in listening to this and to the sessions, it's, you know, hey, goodness, well, I guess I was wrong. I've developed over the years a loss of sensation that goes along with finding out I'm wrong. I don't have any.
You're numb to being wrong.
I've been wrong so many times, it just doesn't make any difference.
You are numb to being wrong. I love it.
Oh, well, let's add one more to it. Hey,
oh, okay. I'm there again. That's cute.
And finding out I'm wrong has been the key to being right. I mean, how else do you get to being right unless you find out you're wrong?
Because if I think I'm wrong, now I can believe something which might make me right. I mean, this is so simple. When you understand it, it's so simple, and yet it is so profound and almost, it's almost like trying to grab a handful of fog. When you are in a mindset that is not prepared to accept that you may not have everything totally right. Second place I want to go to is Trinitarianism was an early Christian. When I say early Christian, it was formalized about 385, 386. It was, which is about the same time that paganism took over the church, I might say. It was a knee-jerk reaction to Arianism, which was the a part of Gnosticism that claimed that Christ was not divine. It originated with Arius, who was a priest from Alexandria, and he maintained that the Son of God was created by the Father and therefore was neither co-eternal with the Father nor consubstantial. And so the church had to then, because there was in the preceding paganism other trinities, and it was very convenient to bring the concept of a trinity into Christianity. Now, look, don't believe what I'm saying. Research what I'm saying. I'm happy with the concept of a trinity. I'm just giving you the history. I was raised with the concept of a trinity. I have the concept of a trinity. I pray. When I pray, I thank the Holy Spirit. I thank God. And I don't have a problem with any of that. I'm just giving you the history, and this is not about division. This is about reality.
And Barris, let me say this in the middle of that, if I can.
Please. Rescue me, please, Daddy. Daddy, rescue me.
Let me share where the gospel revolution comes down on this, and it really is quite simple. You can believe separate, together, whatever you want to believe about the Trinity. But the one thing that that I think is absolutely the truth is these three agree. Now,
but hang on, didn't John say that?
They all agree. That's one thing we know. Yes, and you know, everybody can say something, right?
Okay.
These three agree. In fact, that was in the Gospel of John, which that's a great gospel. Goodness gracious. He's the one that led us to the final conclusion that belief was unnecessary in his own letter, that is, in his own
gospel.
Right, in his own gospel that he wrote. But these three agree. One of the things that kept me insanity in trying to understand the gospel, you know, I remember them telling me, you know, that the Holy Ghost, I'd get in those meetings and, man, the person with the spirit of discernment would be able to read your mail. And you didn't sit on the front row in those meetings. I mean, some meetings you sat on the front row to where near the spout where the glory comes out.
You know why I always wanted that prophet to pick me out? I just thought I was so damn great. I thought I was so, I mean, he couldn't find anything wrong with me.
I hit on the back row in every one of those things.
Dang.
But when they did pick me out, it was, thou art a man called of God. Thou art a, you know, it's like, boy, I'm glad thou didn't know anything else about me.
Even this day, my son, the Lord would say unto thee.
So, goodness gracious. And the only way to deal with some of this stuff, folks, is levity, because it took us through some very difficult situations, or into some very difficult situations, not through them. But I remember, Barristus, this wonderful thought coming to me that, you know, if, and I'd started getting some of the verses down, you know, that Paul's statements that how the Father viewed us, and how we're viewed by Christ. And then I begin to question, how in the world, if these three agree, how Jesus is perfect, but the Holy Ghost is going around pointing out our faults?
Yeah.
So my mind separated itself from this craziness, this twister.
Now, that's an interesting thing about this email from Wayne, and that is, beyond an angry God, there are these people, and we've been speaking about it recently, that don't even believe that God was ever angry. Mm. But if they all three agree, now we've got not schizophrenic, it's like, I don't know, what do you do when there's three people that disagree? Yeah. Moving on to the Cappadocian Fathers, because some of you have heard this term, and probably very few of us know what it is, and the Cappadocian Fathers are a group of three pre-Nicene. They come into the when the Nicene Creed was created in the late 300s. Church saints. You need to research this for yourself. But essentially, there was a woman who became converted to Christianity and then turned her very great estates, vast estates, you know, many acres, into a monastery. And then she converted her family. And her family were called the Cappadocian Fathers. Basil the Great, 330, he was born, and later became a bishop. Basil's younger brother, Gregory of Nyssa, who was a disciple of Clement, who was born in 332. And a close friend of theirs, Gregory of Nazianzus, who was born in 329, and he became a patriarch of Constantinople, which, as you'll remember, was the competing bishopric to Rome for the papal dominance. The Cappadocian region, it was in what we call Turkey, and it was largely originally evangelized by Paul. Now, the Cappadocian Fathers are the people who pushed the Trinity as a doctrine. As I said earlier, it was hotly disputed. It is generally accepted, and it was accepted by way of threats and enforcements up to and including death by execution. So, I just wanted to give some insight to a couple of the terms used in this letter. I think that this will be a good a topic for a future PowerCast, Wayne, but today that's as far as we can take it.
Yeah, and we appreciate you, your communication. It always gives us some stuff to talk about, you know. That's guys, don't don't hesitate when you've got questions or you've had encounters like this with other teachers. Ask us about it. You know, see what we think about it. You know, Derek called last week and was asking about some teacher that seemed to agree with everything about this very issue. And that, yes, God lives in everybody. Yes, Jesus, we're in Christ. But to get the Holy Spirit, you got to meet some qualifications.
Oh, it's yeah.
Like, why do we have to do that? Why? How can the Holy Spirit not approve of what the Father has approved?
Why? Yeah, because these three are in agreement, after all.
Exactly. So, but, you know, the attempt of religion is to find some place to get you to have to qualify on your own. And they'll do it at any point, any place, any station, any viewpoint. Give them a chance, and they are going to seduce you with this stuff, folks. Just remember, it is for freedom that Christ has set us free, not for some ulterior motive of any kind. It is for freedom.
Family, it is that we must leave you. But remember, if all the people who had gone to sleep in church had been laid end to end, they'd have been a whole lot more comfortable. Are you wanting to get out of frustration, confusion, and fear, and into understanding, clarity, and confidence? Then you need to read Grant Miller's great little book called Think and Be Free. You want freedom? I mean, really want freedom? Get this book for just $12.95 at Amazon.com. Think and Be Free by Grant Emerson Miller. We run a value-for-value model here, and it costs us time, cash, and energy to research, produce, and maintain this free product. This value-for-value model is the only way we feel that we can present the gospel freely and unhindered. So, if you feel that you've received real value from this podcast, then I'm asking you to seriously consider donating towards it. Why don't you call area code 321-220-4373 and speak to Jeff Robertson about how you can participate, or go to www.gospelrevolution.com and hit the donate link. And remember, the cash is not the only way that you can help support the gospel. Anything you can do to help the gospel can make all the difference for somebody else, just like you sharing their own journey. Just like you, starting their own journey towards thinking for themselves. Perhaps you'd like to invite Mike to your area. It is easier than you might think. Call our office on the number we just mentioned with details when, where, and why, and we're going to make it happen. So now it's good night for myself, Beres Bartle, from the GR Studios right here in Eva, Alabama.
And it is good night from Michael Williams here in Houston, Texas, which you will hear one more time. Next week, and then after that, I'm going to wait and let you find out what all that is. So thank you guys so much. We appreciate everyone who is participating in the pledge drive. This is a very important time for us, and this trying to get these monthlies up to where that we can accomplish much more. We've got to get to where that the monthlies contributions that are coming in are at least paying the expenses, because as we fall behind each month and each quarter, then of course the monies that we raise now can't be used to go do a lot of other things. It's got to be used to pay off the debt. I had to learn to do that. I very foolishly did it other than that and took the cash that we had raised to go do other things and to help other folks in the gospel and the gospel revolution. But I can't do that anymore. Finally, some wisdom has gotten hold of me. So, and thank those of you who've encouraged me to do that. We appreciate you. Love you so much.
We hope you enjoyed today's podcast. But if you didn't, remember, just because you're offended doesn't mean you're right. So, if you prefer learning how to think to being told what to think, join us again next week, same time, same channel, where we're going to do the same thing all over again.
I'm sure it'll be better.